Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the South Bay Show, preparing for disaster in America on Tuesday, January 7th, 2014. I'm your host, Joe Terry, and the South Bay Show is brought to you by the Academy of Foreign Languages. If you have any interest in learning a new language or brushing up on existing language skills, you should know about the Academy of Foreign Languages. Located in Palos Verdes, the Academy of Foreign Languages specializes in the art of communication. Their mission is to provide the finest language instruction possible. They recognize that each student has distinctive needs and craft their teaching technique to optimize an individual's particular learning skills. At the Academy of Foreign Languages, they strive to create a comfortable environment conducive to learning. So whether you're learning a new language or would simply like to converse in your native tongue, the Academy of Foreign Languages can accommodate you. For more information, visit their website at www.academyofforeignlanguages.com. That's all spelled out, academyofforeignlanguages.com. Or call 310-975-4133. That's 310-975-4133. You can find out more about us at facebook.com/The South Bay Show or visit our website at thesouthbayshow.com. Preparing for disaster in America. This is a subject that can never be treated lightly, but we do our best to make it interesting, engaging, and yes, even entertaining to learn the few key skills and primary information that could save your life, your family's lives, that of a neighbor in a time of crisis, or the life of a treasured pet. Our mission is to engage hearts and minds and build knowledge and skills to help you prepare for whatever may come. This show is a true collaboration with solid roots in the community and a partnership with the official disaster preparation establishment. Our producer is the president of the local Manhattan Beach Community Emergency Response Team Association, Mr. George Butts. Hey, George, how are you doing today?
Good morning, Joe. I am quite well, thank you. Good morning, listeners. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Happy New Year to you, George. And yes, and of course with us today is owner, producer, writer of South Bay by Jackie.com, Jackie Balestra. Hey, Jackie, how are you doing today?
I am doing well this morning, Joe. How are you, George?
Good morning, Jackie. Thank you. Fine.
Happy New Year, everybody.
Happy New Year. So it's a new year. It's, can you believe it, 2014. And this is very appropriate with the recent debacle at Target over the holidays. And this is so much in the news today. I'm very fascinated to have the guest that we have. Jackie, who's with us today?
Our guest this morning is Detective Keith Budge. He is a major fraud investigator with the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department and has been recognized by the financial sector for his work in this field. He has traveled across the United States training law enforcement, the banking industry, and the public regarding fraud trends. He is also an on-air personality with a local radio station, sharing his knowledge of fraud crimes with his listening audience. Welcome to the program, Keith. We are so glad you could join us this morning.
Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate you having me be a part of today's show.
Well, we're very glad to have you, Key, because I assume that your mandate is a little bit broader than what most people think of as fraud, but I'm going to ask the question anyway. What is your mandate? I mean, from the Target debacle, 40 million credit cards potentially exposed, to what is your area in the Sheriff's Department cover?
Well, in my bureau, we handle major frauds, and major meaning it's going to have a significant dollar value. So the Target crime, that would fall into our category. Also real estate fraud, major identity thefts, mm-hmm. Other types of frauds, embezzlements from the public sector. It could be embezzlement within a government organization, things of that nature. If it's large amounts of money, it'll come to the Major Fraud Bureau. When it's lesser amounts of money, it'll usually stay at the local station level. So we have a little bit broader jurisdiction and reach. We have a little bit more freedom to go out because these types of crimes usually require that.
So the generic meaning of fraud is when you just simply, like, steal from people or lie, but you do it using subterfuge. Is that
right? Some type of deception.
Some type of deception. Okay. So does it often involve electronic crime, or is that a misnomer? Is it sometimes just as simple as stealing their mail or something?
It's definitely on both ends. There is some at the very basic levels, the dumpster divers,
right?
Employee theft of information, right through the high tech world of electronic crimes to using different devices to capture your personal information.
Right, right. This is something that, of course, strikes fear into the heart of the average citizen. Because, unfortunately, many, many people are not very aware of how to protect themselves against electronic crime or credit card fraud. The waiter taking your credit card behind a curtain is still obviously a threat, but that's not even close to being as devastating as something like what happened with Target. Do you guys involve yourselves with things like, the Target 40 million credit cards potentially exposed? Does that affect your bureau?
We will have some fallback on that because the different victims live in different jurisdictions, and when they find out their information or their money's been stolen, they'll contact their local police.
Right.
At this level, the Secret Service is going to be involved. There's also a task force that our department is involved with that involves the Secret Service and the FBI. Mm-hmm. So a case like this, I'm not a part of, but there may be a member of my agency that is involved in this investigation as a part of the task force.
Mm-hmm. We have heard, and Manhattan Beach, one of the beach cities has, like all the beach cities, but in particular, I remember the chief of police of Manhattan Beach warning residents against the simple things. Because we live in a very nice area, people enjoy their neighborhoods, enjoy their neighbors. Often, property crimes are simply a matter of opportunity because people don't lock their doors. People don't. They leave their cars running when they go into the house and do things. And it's just, crimes of opportunity. Can you give us a sort of an overview of the more common crimes that can be avoided with
awareness.
Thank you, Jackie.
I truly believe that education is key to elimination.
I wanted to say simple intelligence, but we'll go with awareness. Okay.
But educating yourself, what we're doing today is exactly one of those crime deterrents, because if you are more aware and educated on the trends and things to protect yourself, you're less likely to become a victim. As you said, when you leave the door unlocked and you do that every day, at some point, you're probably going to be victimized. Mm. That's what you want to do with your financials. I check my financials almost on a daily basis, but definitely on a weekly basis, where I'm going in and I'm logging into my accounts electronically to check to make sure that all the expenditures are mine. And a lot of people don't, or they do the old traditional, I wait till the end of the month when my statement comes and then I balance things. By that time, you've been tapped out. Your money's gone. It's across the country, overseas. It's gone. So it's your obligation, especially with technology today, and the banking industry looks at it, that you can't have that old type mentality of, I'll wait till my balance comes in from the statement. You have to stay on top of things in order to make sure that everything that has been subtracted from your account or what's going on with your identity is truly your activity. So,
I got to tell you, Bud, that happened to me once years and years and years ago. One Monday morning, I woke up and I received a notice from the bank. This was really before the big computer age, you know, where everybody had a laptop, and my checks were bouncing left and right. And so I went into the bank and I said, what's going on? I said, I deposited a check. There should be plenty of money in there. Yeah, sometimes it's not fraud. Sometimes it's the IRS comes in and takes the money right out of your bank.
Mm. That's a whole other story.
That's a whole other story.
Key, a question.
Yes.
In purchases with an ATM card, it could be either an ATM /
debit.
My wife will certainly tell me that we should always run it as a credit card. In credit, it takes it straight out of your checking account, but it will not, don't put your PIN numbers in there, because if they get your PIN numbers, then they have access to your whole checking account and everything.
Has your wife attended one of my seminars?
No, but sounds like she probably has, right?
She's right on track. Absolutely. When I start to talk about debit card bad. Keep it simple. Debit bad. You don't want to use that PIN. What's going on is there was an article that I read. I believe it was in electronic media that was talking about some banks here in Southern California, and they were just compromised at the ATM, where organized crime comes in and puts a device that goes right on top of the PIN capture and the insert for your debit card, so it gets the magnetic stripe as well as the PIN code. That's your cash, and the laws that govern your cash versus credit are different. So when you think about if you use a credit card, the credit is the bank's money. They give you a line of credit that you pay off at the end of the month. When you use debit directly into your account, it's gone. I have a debit card / credit card. That PIN has never been activated. And that's the way it's been for my entire time that I've had that card. Mm-hmm. It's only used as credit, and it's a low level. I don't need to have a $10,000, $20,000 limit credit card. I don't make those kinds of purchases on a daily basis. If I do something like that, it's going to be planned. I don't need to keep that in my wallet. The amount of accessibility to your money is something that you have to make that determination. There are businesses that have those kinds of daily expenditures or individuals with that lifestyle, but I don't fall into that category.
Mm-hmm.
The debit, I will never activate that PIN because I will always go into the bank to get the cash that I need. I know, based on my close to 50 years of here on Earth, how much cash I go through in a week. Knowing that, that's the amount of cash that I use, or I'll go in a couple of times, and people say, that's inconvenient. Yeah, it's inconvenient, but guess what? I haven't been victimized. So it's just a matter of when you'll be a victim, if you're using debit versus if. So those are the things to keep in mind. But that's one way, the best way to protect yourself is don't ever use your card as debit.
Right.
Well, that made her happy. She gave me a thumbs up here because she was just in the car, but she's not there now.
Yeah.
But I never go into bank.
Right.
Everything is direct deposited. Any of my businesses, I do all of my transactions at about 6 o'clock in the morning. And so I do have the card, and I do use the PIN, but she has taught me now that I am not to utilize it outside of the bank by using my PIN.
Mm-hmm. Right. With the recent breaches, these devices that get placed on ATM machines or POS, the point of sale terminal, if you're in a store and you're making the purchase, the transactions used to take place on the clerk side. That no longer takes place. It's always now on the customer side for convenience. You always maintain control of your card. You're the one that's swiping the card. Maybe the clerk might verify a signature, but usually that card very rarely leaves your hands unless you're in a restaurant setting. So what's going on with these devices, they mirror the image on the magnetic stripe and also your PIN code, marry those two up so they can make a counterfeit card. They want cash. So that's the reason why debit is bad, because it's access to your cash. And then people wonder, well, when they get victimized, well, I've never been to Vegas or Chicago. Why is my card getting used there? I still have my card. Mm-hmm. This information gets shared, and it's shared electronically. So once it's captured here at a gas station, ATM machine, that card is then manufactured and then sent outside of the jurisdiction where it was captured. The crooks are smart enough to know that it's tough for law enforcement to communicate at such a vast level that they move the card. So if it's captured in one area, it's not usually used in that same area. It might be a different part of California, but if it was captured in Manhattan Beach, I guarantee you it's not going to be used in Manhattan Beach.
Right. So, Key, and you've covered one of the great simple strategies right there. It's just very simple. Get a different card, get a lower limit on a card, and make sure that's the card. If they're going to steal something, they're going to steal something with a low balance, not your $10,000 limit. Whoa, I'd love to have that. But, do something to protect yourself by limiting the damage. And that's one thing. Do you recommend, or do you have any recommendations regarding these companies, LifeLock and all the others that want to protect your financial information? Do these companies have any validity?
I believe they do. I don't use LifeLock, but I do use a monitoring service. Mm-hmm. You have to realize that unless your credit is frozen, you put a freeze on your own credit, that what's going to happen is you're going to be alerted after the fact. So you can minimize the damage. There's still going to be damage, but it's not going to be as bad as, if you found out a month down the road. Mm-hmm. So especially like the holiday time. You can't go into a mall and have one of the anchor stores with a table out in front, three or four people trying to give you instant credit, for their store directly. And you go in with a temporary card, and they'll give you $4,000 or $5,000 worth of instant credit, and then boom, you'll find out about it later. You could have been on LifeLock, and it's still going to go through because the store is going out on the limb just to try and get you in. Mm-hmm. They're creating that incentive for you to spend money in their store, even though it's fraud dollars. It's still your headache you're going to have to clean up. Mm-hmm. So the LifeLocks, they alert you as soon as there's some activity, there's a request. We've seen, vehicles trying to be purchased via identity theft, and people that have had LifeLock have had those transactions stopped. So I think that those are good services, but understand it still gets down to you are in control of your information and where it goes, so you really are the first line of defense. But that is a great secondary line. And I'm very comfortable with mine. Mine's a monitoring service, and they alert me anytime that there's a change or if I apply for something, I get that, text alert, and I can confirm whether it's me. But I find out that when I do it, it's usually within a long enough period of time that I get notified is after the credit's been used and I'm already out of the store with the item that I wanted to purchase.
We've already mentioned one company. Let's go for it. What company do you use?
Well, all three of the Experian, TransUnion, and Equifax all offer a service.
Yes.
And I'm comfortable in that realm.
Okay.
Since that's their, they've been dealing with credit forever, so I stick with them.
Right.
That's where but it's really your preference.
Okay.
It's your level of I always talk about the level of security that you want is basically how you live. In front of your house, do you have an open yard right to the street? Or do you have a small little fence that keeps your little dog inside? Or is it a taller fence? Or is that fence actually a concrete wall that's got maybe a razor wire on top? You've got, the guard towers, and you have locked down, and you've created your own prison. It's the comfort level that you have individually.
Right.
That's what you have to determine.
Right. So one practice that I've been practicing for a few years now is that any cards that I get, whether they be bank cards or credit cards, I sign the back of them with photo ID required. I remember hearing someone speak about credit fraud, and they said that basically you are required by law to sign your cards, but you don't have to sign your signature. And you can put anything on there, you know, bless you, or you can say photo ID required. And then when someone sees that, they're going to, perhaps, they're going to think, well, maybe I should see the guy's photo ID.
Well, you would hope so. But in the world of identity theft, you also have to understand fake IDs go right in hand with obtaining your credit. So if you, let's just say that the crook or your card gets stolen. It's not even counterfeit. It's stolen. So someone else has your ID. So they make a fake ID to go along with your credit card, their picture, and all you have written on the back is CID, checks, photo ID.
Right.
So they do, and they're looking at the fake ID, and of course we're looking at a, you know, 18 to 20-year-old clerk on the other side that's not trained in how to detect counterfeit IDs. They're going to look at it and say, oh, yeah, that's Joe Terry right there. Okay, great.
Yeah.
And that's not. So what the laws say, when you sign that back of the card, that's part of the contract that you are signing that card in agreement with all the terms.
Right.
So it can happen, depends on your relationship with that financial institution, but if you don't complete your obligation and sign the back of that card, they could say you never completed your obligation and we're not liable for that money. Putting CID, C-photo ID, no problem, but put your signature on there as well. Remember, when the clerks look at your ID, they're not looking at a photo of you. They're comparing the signature.
Right.
The signature that's on your ID card, they are matching to the signature on the back of your credit card. And if you don't have a signature, guess whose signature is now Joe Terry's?
Right.
Whoever happens to be standing in front of that clerk.
Scary stuff.
It is. It's an awakening.
So you would suggest not writing check ID?
I say do it in conjunction. Do the both. There's enough room on that card for you to put your signature on there, as unless your signature is so flamboyant that, you know, you're selling 8x10 glossies on eBay. Your SIG line should be fit in there along with CID.
Okay. CID. So now we've been talking, you know, about what most people deal with on their daily basis, card fraud, and don't use your PIN, use credit if at all possible, and limit the amount of credit that you carry in your wallet, which limits your liability and limits your exposure. And these are all great processes. What other kinds of fraud do you find are common that people can avoid where they're not being victimized by someone targeting them?
Well, if you're paying attention to what's going on with your financials, the key is making sure your financials aren't being delivered to a curbside mailbox with the old traditional, let me pull the door down, the red flag goes up. Those are just a crime waiting to happen. Make sure you have a P.O. box, whether it's at a mail-and-more or at the U.S. Post Office. Use the security of a P.O. box to protect your incoming mail. Think about when you're using a lot of credit cards, say for a gas purchase. There are many times that it'll ask for the postal code of the billing for that credit card. So if you think that your card has been compromised, you don't know it. You still have yours, but there's a duplicate out there somewhere. And they know you're in Manhattan Beach, and they have that traditional zip code for Manhattan Beach. They can go ahead and use it as they want to. Mm-hmm. A lot of the post office or the mail-and-mores may have a different, and I know with the U.S. Postal, usually the post office will have a different zip code for their P.O. box carriers. It'll be a digit different. That is a great deterrent, because not all the crooks keep up with all the different zip codes that are associated to a certain area. And some cities have multiple zip codes. That's just a level of protection. Have it something different than your physical address. If you can have that mailing address, that's something a little bit different. It just gives you another layer of protection. Just the fact that you can also eliminate, like we talked about, the crimes of opportunity, the mail thieves to access your information. Mm-hmm. So having a locked device to protect your mail, I think, is one of the first lines of defense that you should have set up, especially for all financials.
Now, I'm sorry, George, did you have a comment?
No, I was actually on mute at that moment, but I do need to leave you all.
Yes.
And I will touch base. I'll be in touch with you later today after I listen to the other half of the show, and thank you for being on, and we look forward to our guest next week, which is Dave Sauer, and we're going to talk a little bit more about home protection. So,
our love and wishes to Linda, George.
All right, great. Thank you.
Take care.
All right, bye-bye.
So, Key, one of the things that I want to cover in the second half are the kinds of frauds that are more elaborate. If you can give us a good long fraud story that, you know, most people, when they think of fraud, I think they think of I'm thinking of a confidence hustle. Like there's this movie American Hustle that's out now that involves, you know, the elaborate con, the elaborate, you know, dress up, you know, take them to an abandoned office that's, you know, the corporation they're going to be investing in or something like that. Or what's Bernie Madoff, you know, the pyramid scheme investment where, you know, everyone thinks they're making money because they're getting each other's money.
Well, the Ponzi schemes and the investment schemes, you see, if it's too good to be true, it is. Greed ends up kind of running us. And even though we might have all the integrity in the world and that great intention that, you know, the things that we do are above board, when that deal comes across and you're going to make 10, 12, 15% return on this in 6 months or maybe even a greater number, is that realistic? You know, and that's where you have to sit there and stop yourself and go, you know, that's probably too good to be true. And you got to do a little bit of background homework on the individuals involved. But especially if they're trying to, hey, this deal's going to close. You got to get your money in now. Mm-hmm. We got to have it in now. You're going to miss that return. You're going to miss the boat.
Right.
I'd hate for it to be you that didn't get that money. Well, that would be a huge warning sign to me.
Right.
You know, and they try and remember, con men, they use affinity. They will try and tie in with you, whether it be at church or in a social setting that you're comfortable with, and they start to connect with you at that different level where you have that, oh, I have a little bit of built-in trust. We go to the same church. You know, Sunday, we're always there at 10 o'clock. Well, so there are a lot of con men that will use that as an area to prey on people, to build that trust, that confidence from a different side, and then swing you over into their investment schemes.
Mm-hmm.
So you really have to make sure you know the people that you're dealing with. You know, they need to be reputable. They should be people that you contact and not them contacting you.
Okay. Okay, that's that's a good one. And I love the I didn't comment originally, but I love the idea that you have that there's this James Bond movie, the most recent one, Skyfall, in which they mentioned one of our standard prescriptions for security in the technology world, in the IT world, security through obscurity. And the idea of getting a credit card statement at a different zip code than your normal physical address to prevent fraudsters from being able to identify your zip code just because they know you live in Manhattan Beach or Hermosa Beach or Redondo, and that's excellent. These are the kinds of things that people need to know and need to understand. Key, we're going to take a station break, and then we'll be right back and talk about more fun fraud things, more things to protect yourself from.
Yeah, before we get to the station break, is fraudster a word? Fraudster. I don't think I've ever heard it.
No?
I think you just made up a word.
It's an inside term.
Yeah.
You're on the inside. You're in my circle now.
You see, Jackie, I'm in the circle.
You're in the circle now.
I've got this plan that we can make 10 to 15% very quickly. We'll talk about it later, though.
Okay, good. So, Jackie, who do we want to thank today?
Okay, well, since we're talking about financials, it's never too early to begin planning your financial future. When it comes to protecting your assets and hard-earned dollars, you'll want experienced professionals with a proven track record and flawless reputation on your team. Briganti, Cameron, Waters & Strong, certified public accountants and consultants, is the largest full-service accounting firm in the South Bay, and they are dedicated to providing professional services of the highest quality. The partners are South Bay residents deeply committed to serving the communities where they live, work, and play. They support a variety of local nonprofit organizations such as Skate Park PV, Palos Verdes Peninsula Land Conservancy, the Torrance South Bay YMCA, Palos Verdes Rotary, and Pediatric Therapy Network, among others. BCWS prides itself on providing national accounting technical experience with the personal attention of a local company. This commitment to uphold high standards of excellence has proven key to their success and first-rate reputation. Their ultimate goal and reward is to see their clients achieve financial success as they define it, whether that means helping them to reduce their tax burden, assisting them with planning to ensure their financial security, succession planning, exit strategies, and wealth transfer. The partners and professionals of BCWS are committed to providing their clients with the expertise and guidance they need to reach their financial goals. For more information, you can visit the website at www.bcws.com or call 310-542-0011 for a free consultation.
All right. So there we have it. You can bcws.com. So Key, now we've covered a lot of the common frauds that I think a lot of people have heard of. Is there anything?
Oh, wait. Oh. Before we go on.
Sure.
Before we go on, I wanted to ask Key something. So this happens to me almost pretty much every year. I only have two credit cards, and it just happened to me 2 weeks ago. I got a call from my credit card company, and they said there have been some suspicious activity on your card. Mm. And she went through a couple of items. I said, yeah, that was me. And then one came in from a Circle K in Phoenix, and I said, no, that's not me. So my credit card company is doing that, and it happens to me about once a year. They, you know, when I say no, that's not me, they take it right off.
Mm-hmm.
So, right. Should I feel comfortable with this service, or?
I would say yes. The banks start doing that kind of that level of protection because the fraud loss is so huge. Mm. They started to track people's activities so they can start to tell whether or not it's you. The Arizona one pops up. Hey, we don't have her going to Arizona ever. This one's a little bit out of the realm. Let's flag this and make a contact, or we'll put a temporary freeze on your card. It's because they absorb the loss. That's the difference when we talk about credit versus debit. The key is put the burden back on the bank. You know, not you. Your burden is already – you worked hard for the money. Now you don't want to fight with your bank try and get it back because your card was skimmed somewhere and they've taken all the money out of your checking account. If it's your line of credit, you can almost instantly obtain credit anywhere. So you can get past the transaction that you need if your card was frozen. Mm-hmm. So I would think that your bank is on top of it. It sounds like you're doing business with a reputable bank and you've moved the burden to the bank and off of your shoulders.
Right.
The only thing that comes into play is sometimes they will put a temporary freeze and you're trying to make this purchase a transaction. Maybe it's dinner, put the card out on the table and boom, there's a stop. And you're now I have a zero balance. I always pay it on time. Why is it frozen? Now you're calling the 800 number, and then you go, oh, yeah, that wasn't me. Okay, we'll reactivate your card. We just want to make sure you were in possession of it, and we'll take this charge off. So there could be a temporary inconvenience, but if you have that secondary card with you, and hopefully it's with a different bank, because what will happen is if they put that free, if you have the two credit cards you say you carry, if they're from the same financial institution, if they the two accounts get connected together, they could put a freeze on both cards based on the activity. Mm-hmm. So if they're with different financial institutions, you've got a little bit more security as far as being able to make that, you know, pay for that expense.
I've had that happen. I've had that happen. Not often. Once every few years that happens. I'll go to buy something. They'll say, oh, this card is frozen. And they'll give me their phone, or I'll pull out my cell phone and I'll say, oh, yeah, yeah, me. And then they'll unfreeze it. Yeah, I've had that happen too.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. But they cover it. I've never once have I had to cover the cost of something that was charged on my credit card that I didn't do. I've never had to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if they froze it and kept you away from spending their money and charging you 27% interest, they'd really be operating at a loss.
Yeah.
They want you back active spending as quickly as possible.
Right.
And they'll understand, hey, she's not in Arizona, so any future Arizona purchases, go ahead and put a stop on those.
So is that all like computer programming that picks that stuff up?
Yes.
Okay.
So the question I have, Jackie, is that when that happens, do you get your card replaced with a new number?
Yep. As a matter of fact, I get it like the next day.
I say
to them, so what should I do with this card? They say destroy it, and I throw it right in the shredder.
Right.
Yeah, I throw it right in the shredder, and the next day it's in the mail.
Right.
And as I said, it happens every year.
Right. Wow. Now, that means that there's some risk that you can't avoid. Some place you go, somehow people get access to your number.
I had my card. I've never lost a credit card.
Yeah.
Do you buy gas with your credit card?
I do.
Yeah, that's probably where almost every gas pump in Southern California has been compromised. If you pay at the pumps or even inside, the skimming devices that have been placed internally, they capture, as I was talking about earlier on the ATM, very similar.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these devices are now internal inside the gas pumps, and they'll use Bluetooth technology. So once the crook goes in and places this device inside the gas pumps behind the point of sale where you put your card in, then what they do is they have the technology that the transaction goes through and processes for you as you swipe your card. But it also, this illegal device that's implanted also secures that information for the crook to use at a later time. They will come up to the gas pumps in their car with their laptop, act like they're getting gas, and then Bluetooth all the information, just download it directly to their computer without having to go back into the gas pumps.
Mm-hmm.
That information is then re-encoded in and made into counterfeit credit cards, which are then distributed across the United States. It's organized crime.
So they physically implant a device in either the gas pump or, as you said, the point of sale? Wow. Don't they have cameras and stuff set up to catch people doing this?
They do, but what will happen, the crooks understand that most security cameras have an expiration on how long they will hold their footage or how long the data will be maintained inside the computer that monitors.
Excuse me, Key, I'm sorry. Joe, what is that annoying noise?
Key, are you rubbing something physically against your microphone because we can hear
it? I did have something bounce on the top.
Mm-hmm.
Right,
yeah.
Okay. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I forgot where I was at.
Organized crime.
Oh, okay.
They're skimming.
Once they've downloaded this information, the cards are manufactured and shipped out across the country. Obviously, they're looking for the debt people that are using debit to pay, but they'll take the credit as well, and that's why you start seeing transactions all over the place. But when it comes to the security cameras, most of them have an expiration, whether it's 24 hours, the old videotapes, usually it's 24 hours to 1 week, and then the tapes get recycled. Or in computer software, maybe it's a month or 3 months. The crooks are waiting once they've got your information. You believe that once you've been victimized, you look and you start looking at your last few transactions, and it had to be one of those last places I used the card is where it was compromised. No, you need to look back 3 and 4 months. That's probably where your point of compromise occurred. The crooks are waiting a period of time before they reuse your information based on exactly that. So that way the security cameras have timed out or expired.
Wow, so the crooks aren't as stupid as we've made them out to be.
It's organized crime.
Wow.
Right.
You know, it's the old Soprano type, you know, situation. It, you know, and it goes across different ethnic realms. But the bottom line is, yeah, it's a mafia.
Yeah. And this is the shape of fraud today. I mean, anything new on the horizon that we should be looking out for that the average citizen wouldn't normally think of?
Well, you know, you have to just understand that as technology evolves and we become more reliant on technology, also the crooks are using technology and they stay right in tune with whatever the latest trend is, whether it's they still use the emails to gather your information and go phishing. You know,
right.
You can't go a day where you haven't found out that you're, you know, a relative to the prince of some country that has left billions of dollars that needs to get out of the country.
Right. They just need a small little transaction, and then they can put in $1 million in your account. It's worth it, right?
3% of recipients fall prey to that.
Right.
3%.
Right.
And, you know, it's like some businesses, you know, well, if I got a 3% return on how I'm trying to capture my new customer, it's not worth it.
Right.
For them, it's very profitable. 3% is huge profits for them. So there's just a lot of money, and it gets down back to the root factor of greed.
Now, I have something key for you that I really wanted to cover, and that is fraud against the elderly. We talk here about disasters often, and there's no disaster worse than I believe an identity theft or financial crime against a senior or the elderly in general, because then they're less likely to, as you said, you know, be checking their accounts on a weekly basis. They're going to be a monthly or even quarterly basis, and it's going to be devastating. Can you talk a little bit about that?
The elder fraud, it is one of those where it just kind of turns your stomach when you hear about it. It's very common. And a lot of family are busy or your seniors, they handle their affairs. They always have, and they don't want the help.
Right.
So sometimes that stubbornness comes into play, and if they're not under conservatorship, you know, they're going to fall prey to the people that are around them. And a lot of times you'll find that it's whether it's in their in-home care, or something through the, like I talked about with the affinity, where maybe someone through the church that is, they prey on the elderly, they seek them out, build their trust, and then start to slowly take over their financials until they've got nothing left. And that includes deeding over houses or taking out seconds on homes. You know, if family's not there to help to protect, you know, we usually don't get notified until there's nothing left.
Right.
Yeah.
Just that's I brought it up, but there aren't many solutions when the crime is being perpetrated by a criminal who has access to everything. The
right.
Home, the physical, you know, we used to say in computers any security begins with the physical. And do you have your physical, devices secured? And then we start talking about the more sophisticated electronic types of crimes. But, just the physical aspects of this crime is devastating. Well, we've covered a lot of issues with fraud, but one of the things we haven't really talked about is the frauds that probably will come. We've talked about, you know, in disaster mode, you know, the key disaster here in Southern California, the earthquake. In a severe earthquake, there will be lots of needs, water, medicine, food, shelter, of course. But one of the things, and one of the things is, of course, you should have cash on hand because perhaps the ATMs will not be functioning for some period of time. Can you tell us, are there other things that we haven't covered in the fraud category in terms of what happens after a disaster?
Well, a lot of times you'll start to see, people raising money, and they'll use the name of this whatever disaster it was. You know, every hurricane, every time there's an earthquake, whatever, you know, whether it's international or it's, you know, here on our home ground, people will use that as the let me tug on your heartstrings to give, and the fake organizations that start popping up. You really need to make sure, at least if you're going to protect yourself when you want to give and help get a community back on its feet or a country or whatever it is, that you're doing it with the right group. Again, if someone comes knocking on your door, I'd probably close the door. I will seek out the organization, you know, to donate my money. Mm-hmm. That's really one of those things that they just try and tug on your heartstrings and say, gosh, the people are just suffering so bad. There's these children that just don't have anything. Mm-hmm. So you go, okay, I'll give. And then you find out that, you know, you were taken, and these fraudsters have, you know, raised hundreds, thousands, maybe millions of dollars, you know, under this ruse of it's going to go to the children, and there is no group, there is no organization, and that money is all gone. So you really got to make sure you know who you're giving to.
Yeah, the Red Cross doesn't come knocking on your door.
No.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, I don't like to mention organization names, but that one absolutely is probably one that you can trust above and beyond anyone else.
Yeah, but that's the other thing. There are companies that go around, and you get it on your computer too, where they'll say they're the Red Cross, but they're not.
Mm-hmm. But they're coming to you. Like you said, the Red Cross isn't going to knock at your door. If you want to give, they may run a commercial, but you can reach out to the Red Cross, whether it's through a local office, and you can go to a local office and say, I want this money designated for Haiti, or I want it designated for Katrina, whatever it is. You can designate that money, and they will at the local end designate that money to go where you want it.
Right. Right. Or, Jackie, the Red Cross won't come to your door, but the Crescent Cross will come to your door, or the Maroon Cross
right.
will come to your door.
Right.
And the symbol looks the same.
Right.
And you make the association in your mind. They never said it.
Right, right. And it's the same thing, and I'll mention another good one, the Salvation Army. You know, they put their Santa Clauses out in front of the stores and stuff.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And there, you go places and you see people that are out there and they kind of look like them, but they're not them.
Right.
Right?
Right, right, right. Right. And that's
it doesn't say Salvation Army. They might have the shield
right.
design, but yeah. I kind of see that regularly.
Yeah. That's another. Can you speak to that for a moment, Key? Because we see a lot of organizations often that are very similar to well-known organizations, but they're not the same.
The Girl Scouts with their brownies.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It really gets down to their you know, they may be a good organization. It gets down to their tax exempt level if they've filed the proper requirements to be a nonprofit to go out and seek donations. You know, that's, you know, it. We usually don't get involved until it's after the fact when someone starts doing a little bit of due diligence. They see that this poor indigent person, you know, walks around the corner and gets inside a brand new Mercedes and drives off is when their suspicion becomes a little bit more, you know, alert and we get tipped off to maybe pay attention. But those are tough. I mean, those are small amounts of money that they're obtaining, you know, whether it's a couple hundred bucks. In the whole scheme of things, it's these online type of groups that are trying to get you to electronically pay, you know, to their PayPal account or, you know, to send them money electronically. And it's leaving the country. It's not even landing here in the States, right. You know. But it's, again, it's they pull on emotions. It's getting that tie-in to you somehow so they can get you to give an emotional charitable giving versus something you really thought about. So they're trying to create a sense of comfort for you. And if it's a false sense of comfort, that's something that you've got to start to build up that tolerance to and start saying, you know, the word no is okay. You know, if you give, you know, and most people do charitably give, whether it's through their church or, you know, to the Red Cross. You don't have to give to everyone that stops and grabs your arm and says, hey, you know, I'm starving, you know, feed me. That's not your obligation, but there are some people that feel that it is.
Key, is there some part of the kinds of messages that your bureau tries to get out to the public that we haven't covered yet?
You know, it's fraud occurs whether the economy is up or the economy is down. We see that with real estate fraud. There's money to be made from people that don't pay attention to their financials, or are overly trusting, or who don't educate themselves, you know, for types of, you know, whether it's a large transaction or not. Mm-hmm. You have to be aware. You trust is something that, you know, we see, you know, inside, if you're a small business owner, we see employees steal all the time. But the trust was given to them because they've been an employee for 10, 12, 15, 20 years. And that person, for some reason, has justified themselves that they should have been paid more over that 20-year period. So they steal it from you. And then businesses are run into the ground. It's your level of trust. You know, we get down to those root, you know, who we are. We want to trust people. But if you're not paying attention, then shame on you. You know, victims are, you know, it's opportunity, but it's also neglect. And people think that everyone else should look out for them. You got to look out for yourself. That's the bottom line. You got to pay attention to yourself. You've got to build the walls in front of your house as high as you're comfortable. But understand, if they're not very high, you might be victimized. You know, if they're very high, you still could be victimized, but at least you're alert.
Right.
It gets down to an individual thing that we all have to say. You know, I've lost a lot of trust, unfortunately, with the things that I've seen. So I'm very skeptical as things, you know, come towards me. But I'll see someone standing right next to me that'll say, sure, oh, yeah, absolutely. But they haven't seen the things that I've seen. Mm-hmm. So it's an individual thing. Education is key. What we're doing today, the topics that we've talked about, just to be aware of it, you are 10 steps ahead of where you were before the hour started. And those are the things that you just want to be aware of. Continually educate yourselves on things that are going on, to the new trends, the new whether it's with social media, paying attention to the news. There's people that don't want to watch the news because of what's going on. I understand that, but you really should find some place that you can get your information that you're comfortable with and trust to a certain degree, and continually educate yourself.
And that's what we always talk about on the show. You said it again, just in a different form, is that you got to take care of yourself. You know, you can't sit around and wait for the cavalry to come charging in.
Right. That's the bottom line, because the cavalry, it reacts. You know, it reacts to a situation that's already occurred. You can prevent that situation from ever occurring. Only you can make that prevention. Mm-hmm. You know, Smokey Bears says, you know, only you can stop forest fires.
Right.
This is your own forest fire. You know, stop it before you have one. You know, and if you have one, minimize it to a small grass fire. You know, just don't want things to explode and get out of hands. And then you turn to the government official and say, well, we'll fix everything. Yeah, no, I'm sorry, I can't. I'm going to react and I'll try and arrest somebody. But that money's gone.
Mm-hmm.
You have to come to terms with the fact that you did not pay attention to your own financial future. And you have to bear that. And that's a lot of people have trouble accepting that.
Right.
Yeah, we get that every week. You are preaching to the choir here.
Yeah. Well, Key Budge, fraud investigator, L.A. County Sheriff's Department, it's been a great hour. Thank you very much for joining us.
Oh, it was my pleasure. I really appreciate the opportunity to share information with the public. Those that want to receive it, that's someone I'll never meet.
Right. We have had, you know, so many different physical experts in physical issues, you know, the physics of crime and the physics of disasters. But when it comes to fraud, we're talking a lot about human factors. We're talking about trust, as you said. which is a huge factor. We're talking about, you know, avoiding the kinds of criminals that they don't use guns, they don't use knives, they use more subtle weapons.
Keystrokes.
These are very subtle weapons against us, and they're attacking our financial lives. When you think of the future of fraud, are we getting better or worse?
It continually evolves. You know, as whatever the technology that comes through, the crooks evolve with it. We have to continue to evolve as law enforcement, but it's there's just too much money to be made. These crooks are pros, and you know, it's funny, when we catch a fraudster, they truly believe that they are a business person. You know, there's those in organized crime that, you know, they know what they are, but there's some that are con men that really try to sell, you know, that they're a legitimate business person, and they try to get these through the Ponzi schemes and whatnot, but they try to just work on your trust, mm-hmm. you know, and gosh, I've had a relationship with him for years. I can't believe he'd do this. Mm-hmm. Well, for years, he's been cultivating you. Mm-hmm. So you just have to make yourself aware that you could be victimized from any direction, and as long as you're paying attention, you can reduce that risk. But it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when at some level, whether it's a little transaction in Arizona or it's something more major where you found out that someone's taken a second mortgage out on your house. You just have to pay attention to the things that are going on in your life financially.
Right.
And we've added a new word to the lexicon. He just used your word.
Fraudster.
Absolutely. I've used that for years. I don't know.
I've never heard it.
Wow.
I don't know who you're hanging out with that you use this language.
I don't use it with you, Jackie.
Okay.
I don't think of you as a fraudster. I really
Thank
don't.
Thank God.
Key, it's been great. What a great hour. And I know that our listeners, are there any resources out there that you think that would help people? We often talk about websites. Anything come to mind that we can refer people to?
You can go to the LA County Sheriff's Department, LASD.org. The department has great information that's available, a lot of pamphlets that kind of describe ways to protect yourself and things to do, you know, right. following some type of a crime, LASD.org,
right.
or FTC.com. It's the Federal Trade Commission. They're tasked with collecting all the data through a fraud. You can go to any law enforcement website. I'm sure Manhattan Beach PD also has information on their homepage. Mm-hmm. So the information is available through most law enforcement agencies. And it's more awareness and what to do after the fact, but you really need to educate yourself, as we've done today,
right.
to really prevent yourself from becoming a victim.
Right.
Well, educate yourself now. Yeah, educate yourself now. Don't wait for it to happen to you.
Right.
That's what we're all about.
That's right. Proactive. You got to be proactive. That's it. Well, it's been a great hour, Key Budge, fraud investigator, L.A. County Sheriff's Department. We wish Linda all the best as she goes through her procedures. George, it's been a great show. Thanks, George, for bringing us Key Budge. And thank you, Jackie.
Always a pleasure.
All right. That's our show for today, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.